Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Travis, as usual these days with WWE television shows, the headline is about the bloodline. And we had an emotional moment with Jay and Jimmy in the ring after Sammy sunset flipped Jimmy and got a quick win in a match that was mostly on split screen. They've managed to squeeze two commercial breaks into that 10-minute main event. And it looked like Jay was struggling emotionally. And then he walked right past Jimmy, kind of brushed past his shoulder, went down to ringside where Sammy was standing. They had a moment. They stared at each other. Jay hugged him. But then Jay super kicked Sammy and got in his face and said, "It's all about family." I think implying it always was. I'm not sure. I want to get your take on whether this looked like a decision he made on the spot after hugging Sammy, or it was a swerve for no good reason other than, you know, messing with Sammy's head, which certainly the Bloodline have practiced quite a bit in over the months. The crowd went from chanting "Holy shit" when Jay hugged Sammy to crestfallen, gasping, crushed when they all beat him up. And then Cody runs out to his music to make the save. What'd you think? A big chapter here in the Sammy Bloodline saga.
Yeah, to answer the specific question, I do think it was just kind of them messing with Sammy like that. It was just kind of all a part of the deal to lower Sammy's guard. And I took it as that decision was made before he showed up on the, you know, in the ring or in the stands with the people in the spotlight on them, Jay, that is. But I thought it was a fine, well done main event. The match itself was exactly what it needed to be. This did not need to be any kind of five star match or anything like that.
Nobody's in the story.
Let the emotion, let the emotion, let the story tell the story, and let the emotion play itself out. And the split screen, I tell you what, it was something that I paid attention to the split screen. Not that I thought something was going to happen during the commercial that they wouldn't replay anyway, if it was that important. But I found myself watching the split screen, tiny little thing. I'm already watching it on my laptop, and then it gets even smaller. And I'm
welcome to 2023. Yeah,
here I am. But no,
watching people stuff. Watching Hollywood blockbusters on their, you know, 5-inch screen on airplanes. So
absolutely, and absolutely okay with it. The one thing issue I had with it, I wish they had one more minute to play the thing out. They immediately had to cut away and go to their Crisley Knows Best as soon as Cody kind of came out. Uso's back out of the ring, and then logo, and we're off to the next show. I wish they had at least 30 more seconds to milk that. Let's see them stare each other down. Cody pat Sammy on the chest a couple times. "You okay? How you feeling here, pal?" But hey, that 30 seconds got, you know, I'd rather the story get told the way it was than, you know, rush somewhere else and take that 30 seconds possibly away from something else. But really good. I thought they advertised or got out earlier in the day. I saw on one of my aggregator sites, they're promising a really big Raw tonight. You're not going to want to miss this. And I think they, for the most part, delivered, certainly at the top and bottom of the show.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there was some stuff in the middle, too, that we can get into that was noteworthy. Do you think that Jimmy – we're to believe that Jimmy knew Jay's decision before Jay super-kicked Sammy?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think the reactions were all genuine, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
I didn't take it as this was some big family swerve. It was just – Jay taking a risk. I mean, what if Jimmy just punches him in the back of the head when he turns his back on him? Like, "Oh, you want to turn your back on me, bro?" And just, you know, socks him. But you know, this was a Jay thing, and Jay knew how everyone would react, and played out like he thought it would.
Yeah, because I think it makes sense when we look at it that way, that mm-hmm. that Jimmy was genuinely, that they weren't acting. Jay was, were to believe, emotional with Jimmy, and it was you can read it multiple ways even before he brushed past him, which is, yeah, it's been tough, but I can't leave you, brother. I'm on your side. It's all about family, even though I'm torn up inside and I am conflicted. You know, those are the emotions that I think was being conveyed by Jay, and Jimmy was just looking at him pleadingly. Like, you know, please, you know, I took a chance by sticking.
My life is on the line.
Yes, that too. Like, do you understand the stakes here? And so when Jay brushed past Jimmy, it wasn't violent. It was more, in retrospect, we can look back and say, that was Jay pushing past Jimmy to say, I got some business to take care of. Mm. We'll get back to this. And he went to ringside. And then again, it Jay being a heel at this point, and it doesn't mean he'll stick. I mean, then we can get into that too, because Jay seems genuinely conflicted, but once he made the call, he had to go all in, because, you know, obviously Roman will see if he's halfway in, and that won't count for anything. Right. So he had to go all in with super kicking Sammy, throwing him into the ring and beating him down. There's going to be a discussion about whether that's believable with, you know, Jay's or, you know, consistent with what Jay has shown his character to be, his constitution to be in the past. And we can delve into that, and I'm sure people will. But when he hugged Sammy and then turned on him, the idea is, I mean, you can read it a lot of different ways, because there's enough nuance and layering to the storyline that Jay did have genuine affection for Sammy. And it's,
yeah,
sort of like
the hug was real. I trust you was, I think, real. It's obviously that Sammy can't trust Jay. Like the affection that's real. It's almost like, you know, kiss of death kind of thing.
Exactly. That's where I was heading.
Sorry, I got it. Not to the extent, but Michael's, you know, I love you, I'm sorry. Just, you know, Dick and Ric Flair. But, I think everything that was shown, we're meant to take literal. No swerves, it was us the whole time, we were in on it, nonsense. Just genuine reactions from everybody involved, and everybody played their part, and I'm willing to take everything at face value, because everything was well executed and very believable, even though I saw it coming, right? Like the positioning, like once Jay started like kind of getting in super kick range, I was like, oh, here we go. They're that's that Triple H thing of, you know, giving us something really emotional, and then, you know, the stab to the heart. But still, absolutely well done. And I'm a fan. That was good stuff tonight.
With the turn by Jay, you can be upset with it, because I think the bond that fans felt for Jay and Sammy and their relationship was real. But when you look at WrestleMania in a realistic sense, it had to be the Usos defending against KO and Sammy. So it was a matter of, how do they get there? Are they definitive in that Jay and Jimmy, that Jay aligns with Jimmy and the Bloodline, or are they ambiguous going into the match? And that was a question that I had. I didn't think that Jay was going to, like, when Jay hugged Sammy, there's like 10, 12 seconds where I'm like, how do they do their WrestleMania?
What are they
going to
do?
Their WrestleMania
match?
How do they do their WrestleMania match? Because that's a big deal at WrestleMania. You've got to have that match. So, I am not resigned to there not still being something that Roman says to Jay, or a look Roman gives, or something that the Bloodline does that still tests Jay's resolve to stay with family. So I'd say stay tuned if you're disappointed tonight. There's more to come.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're. Absolutely promising, or not promising, but their SmackDown is getting a lot of play for this week. They kind of took away the big hook, Roman's going to blame Jimmy for everything. Well, Jay's back, so Jimmy's off the hook as far as Roman's wrath. Now the question is, and things switch to, now the focus is, you know, back on Jay. Jimmy can breathe a breath of fresh air, go back to the background a little bit, where I think he's probably character-wise a little more comfortable just throwing in his yeets and his my dogs every now and then. The last 2 weeks with the focus being on him, I think character-wise he's probably happy to that Jay's back and he's out of the hot seat. But that's still a reason to watch Friday to continue the story and to see what Roman has to say about all this.
Yeah, because Jimmy did not accomplish what he was assigned the duty of doing. It was Jay that did it. So how Roman reacts is going to be interesting. Does he see this as enough? The issue's resolved. It didn't happen the way that he imagined. It didn't happen with Jimmy doing it, but it's good enough. And I don't know. And then should Roman's character hold it against Jay that he took so long? Like, will there be some comments about Roman that will make Jay go, geez, I did all that?
Yeah. Everybody is going to suffer because Roman didn't get, like you just said, Roman didn't get, superficially he got what he wanted, but he didn't, as the like sociopath, you know, patriarch of the whole thing, he didn't get what he wanted, certainly not how he wanted it. So I think Jimmy's going to catch some strays from Roman because he lost a match. There's an L on his win-loss record. And Jay, where you been? Why have you been incommunicado? This defiant streak of Jay, even though he's back now, Roman can't be a fan of it. Like there's no way. So things are still absolutely falling apart. This is just a thin kind of veneer of we back and the bloodline is strong. But no, Friday, Roman's going to get in some asses and there's going to be some looks and there's going to be Jay sitting there going, did I do the right thing? Like, here we go again, kind of thing.
Yeah. All right, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers and emails, and move on with the show. We'll certainly talk more about this development, but we'll also cover other aspects of the show, including the John Cena-Austin Theory moment and the 3-on-3 women's match that was set up and more. So let's get to that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 6, 2023. Thanks for joining us today, whether you're live streaming the show right after Raw at WadeKellerPostShow.com or downloading the show on your podcast feed. Either way, thank you. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, 35-plus years of publishing that, along with the website pwtorch.com and the host of various podcasts, including this one, the Wade Keller Post Shows, following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. This is our red logo show, our blue logo show, our more like regular podcast, not the live post show call-in format. Tomorrow, Zach Haydorn, PW Torch assistant editor, will be joining me for the flagship. So hope you'll look for that on Tuesday night on the blue feed. We've got some really cool interviews up from our archives on that blue feed over the past week too. So hit refresh if you haven't yet. Don't wait for the this week's flagship to get some good listening. The other voice you hear is Travis Bryan from the PW Torch East Coast cast. Travis, welcome back to the co-host chair. After Raw, I don't know how long it's been.
Yeah, it's been a while. I've done at least three shows I've been on with you. I've been all SmackDown over the last 2 years or so. But, yeah, it's good to be back and good to talk about Raw. A good show to come back and talk about.
Yeah, there is a lot to talk about, for sure. So we'd love you to join us. If you're live streaming the show, we invite you to call. The number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. You can call and just listen, or you can call and push 1 on your keypad, and that will flag you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be part of the conversation, and we likely will bring you onto the show to ask a question or comment on Raw or our discussion thus far. If it works better for you, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can send emails during Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, and you don't have to even listen to the live stream to still be part of the show that way. If you are live streaming us, feel free to still email if it works better than calling. And if you are listening to us on delay, discuss Raw, but you have thoughts on what we're saying, send an email in and we'll bring it up on the flagship, perhaps tomorrow. So lots of ways for you to be part of the show, even if you don't live stream the show. Again, that email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Check out, by the way, my new YouTube channel, youtube.com/Wade Keller. Search Wade Keller on YouTube. Got some fun stuff I'm doing there with some YouTube shorts. And I had 4 or 5 videos after AEW Revolution last night, hitting on some highs and lows from the event in different categories. So check that out if you haven't yet. Also, I'm reading a cover story that I wrote each week right now from the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter on the 30th anniversary of writing the cover story. Last week, we put up a really nicely produced video with me reading the 30 years ago cover story on the suicide death of Kerry Von Erich. I also talked about some other content in the newsletter, some other things that we reported on, and we'll be having another one of those videos this week. So subscribe if you haven't, and as every YouTuber says, subscribe, like, and comment. Do it because you want to, but also do it to help us because YouTube cares about that when it comes to the algorithm that starts recommending us to other people, and we're kind of new in the YouTube realm. So every little bit helps us gain some traction and start getting recommended on other people's feeds. And subscribe to the PW Torch YouTube channel too while you're at it, because we've got 2 channels now with Zach and Tyler and Stephanie and others doing regular content over there. Okay, so let's shift back to discussing tonight's episode of Raw. I want to check here to see if we have our on-site correspondent ready yet. I think we do, yeah. So we'll actually start with that. William, I was going to go to you first, but hold on. 716, you're also up after that, so hold on. But let's go ahead and go to Aaron in Boston, who attended Raw tonight. He's our on-site correspondent. Aaron, thank you for calling. Are you ready for us?
I am.
Awesome. Thank you. So how was the show?
It was amazing. It was my first show in 3 years, obviously due to COVID and, you know, me breaking my leg. But I had a great time tonight. It was probably one of the best shows they've done in this town for a while.
It felt big time. Finish, Aaron. Sorry for stepping on you.
No, I was going to say, like, I've been to other, like, lead-ups to Mania here in Boston before, and this is probably, I'd say, easily top 2 of the ones that I've been to so far.
Interesting. I want to start, because I want to cover a lot of territory here with you, but I want to start with what's freshest on your mind, which is the reaction to Jey Uso hugging Sammy, the holy shit chant, and then super kicking Sammy, and then participating in beating him down until Cody ran out. I want you to talk about your emotions as you watch that all play out, and the crowd reaction, the mood in the room, because Raw went off the air shortly after Cody arrived to make the save. So we saw Cody save and the bloodline back away. I want you to talk about the mood in the room even after Raw faded and how fans were reacting. Was it like, we saw a great angle, that was great, or damn it, Jey turned on Sammy, we're crushed, that sucks. Talk about that.
I kind of took it both ways. I think some fans, first of all, I'll start with me. I was hyped. Like, this is probably one of the best storylines they've done in a long time. So I was waiting for it. I was almost anticipating him to either hit him or do something, and he did. But I think most of the fans were like, holy crap, we just saw this great angle right here. But I'm looking around the crowd and I see some fans were kind of disappointed. I don't know if it's because they did it so early, like, you know, there's 3 weeks left after tonight. But I wasn't sure they were disappointed because they didn't want him to do it at all. So it was kind of both, I think.
When Jey hugged Sammy, was that the biggest pop of the night? Was it John Cena coming out? Was it Trish or Lita? Like, is it hard to rate?
No, actually, I'll go number one. That when he hugged Sammy, that was one. Probably one and 1A with Cena, and then number 2 was Rollins. I don't know, like, he just gets a reaction here that I've never seen him get anywhere else. And I've seen him in other places. I've been to New York. I've been to other states. He just gets a reaction here that I've never seen before. And like when Logan Paul, when they were trying to get him to like calm down, he just kept doing his theme song. That's something I've never seen for him. Like, normally his characters get stale quick, but they've got something with this current character. But yeah, so I'd say when Jey hugged Sammy, one and one he was seeing, and then right behind him, Rollins.
Interesting. Interesting.
Edge, obviously, yeah, because it's Edge.
Sure, sure. Travis, jump in with a question for Aaron.
Yeah.
Travis, are you there? Are you muted? Oh, Travis, you're muted. Did I mute you?
Yeah. No. I muted myself. I was...
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. So you're back. Cool. You got a question for her?
Not particularly. I mean, you were doing a great job, Wade.
Thank you, Travis.
The pointed questions, and Aaron with his pithy and good responses. No, I mean, it sounds like what I wanted to know is what I already saw and heard with my eyes and heard with my ears, the crowd, the emotion, to kind of explain that in his first answer. Of the undercard stuff, what was the most over? What, you know what? No, that's too broad of a question. Was Lita, Trish, and Becky not as over as it seemed like? To me, at least, it didn't.
No,
it seemed kind of muted. I didn't understand.
It
did. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It did. No, you're right. It did kind of. I don't know if they were burned out, or either burned out from the Cena thing, or they were saving all their energy because they knew it was going to end the night. But I thought of all of the reactions, that was probably I want to say flat, because that's kind of strong. But they didn't get as many reactions as I thought someone like Trish and Lita would get, because they're never around.
Right.
You know, they're kind of part-timers, so you usually cheer them when they show up. And for a city like Boston to give them, like, that kind of a, like, lukewarm reaction was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if it was me, but it did feel a bit of a muted reaction. Like, they were into them, but not as much as I thought they not deserve. That's a tough one, but that I thought they would be a little more over, and you know, in a major city, you know, headed into WrestleMania, those three together, that dynamic. But I think that says something for that dynamic. It's not the hit that I think that we all thought it would probably be. Like, how does this trio not work? Like, it should, but yeah, it seemed kind of muted.
Aaron, was there a way to get it? Oh, go ahead, Aaron. Yeah, respond to Travis. My fault.
No, I was going to say, I'll put it to you this way. The opening main event match between, I forgot, Carmelo Hayes and Tina Tozawa got a better reaction. I'm not kidding.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's the first.
To be fair, Carmelo is from Boston. So, I mean, that goes in it too. But, like, I've never seen an opener get that kind of a reception before. I was like, well, these fans are ready.
That's good to hear for him, certainly.
Yeah.
Carmelo. Aaron, was there a way to gauge the response to Cody in Boston? I know... It was, you know, he shared the stage with Cena, and he shared the stage with Sammy making the save. But talk about the reaction for Cody.
Oh, no. When Cena introduced him, I'll put him, like, right behind, like, Rollins. Like, he got a big reaction as well. Like, you can tell me there's a lot of Cody shirts in that crowd. Because I pay attention to that stuff when I do stuff like this. So, like, I pay attention to what's, you know, obviously a lot of Cena stuff, but there was a lot of Cody merchandise in those stands tonight, and you know, he's over obviously, and the fans love him, and they're happy to have him back. So he's probably gonna get that reaction. I know he was gone for a while, but you know, it'll fade over time like they always do. But right now he got an amazing reaction tonight.
How did fans react to Kevin Owens when he came out to face Solo, and talk about the emotions in the building when KO rebuffed Sammy, and then they also, I assume, aired in the arena, you know, KO making his case to Sammy later why he just isn't ready to embrace Sammy yet. Did fans seem understanding of KO, or resentful or you know, upset with Owens for not just letting go and uniting with Sammy?
When he told Sammy that, like, I don't need you, they booed. Like they were upset. They were upset with Owens. Like they're waiting. It's like a DX reunion in 06. Like they're waiting for these two to just to be like slap hands and then just and turn side by side and just fight the bloodline. And they didn't get that tonight. They got Jay turning, but they didn't get Owens taking his side.
Yeah. What was the reaction when Owen said, "This is the same arena you kicked me in the balls," and you know, and fed
me
to the bloodline?
They cheered that. They cheered that. You know, they're referencing Boston. So anytime they reference Boston or the city they're in,
so that's not a real response.
No, like Mick Foley cheap pop, right? So, but no, but yeah. when
it's like,
told
I get
you,
hey, boo.
It was weird.
I get you. You boo
night.
when he says, you know, I'm not ready to reconcile and things. But like, you have to at least recognize he has reason,
right?
And this is excellent storytelling.
I think the booing is just like earlier with Jimmy was saying. I think they were hoping it would happen tonight in Boston. And in fact, I didn't take it as they were booing Owens for saying, "Oh, I'm done with you. I'm not going to help you." I took it as, "We're not going to see this tonight in Boston, damn it." You know?
Okay. And even if they were upset, and not just because they wouldn't see it, even if they were legitimately upset, I guess that's, you know, fans have the right to you know, in the moment, feel the way they feel.
Absolutely.
But you still have to at least acknowledge that, you know, this is exactly what you would do as a person. Like, wait a second, what? And also, it also explains 6 weeks later why he didn't show up and make the save before the match was over at the Royal Rumble. Like, because it wasn't about Sammy. It was about him getting his hands on the bloodline. I'm not willing to interfere in the match, even if it would help a so-called possible ally, because I don't want him as a so-called possible ally. So it also explains, you know, in just a quality way of storytelling, not in a retrofitting kind of deal where they're making up for a mistake from before. You just go, oh, okay, I was upset Owens didn't come out and make the save during the match or while all the bloodline shenanigans were happening. But this explains it. Yeah, he's not over, and understandably so, not over Sammy, you know, doing what he did for the last year or so. So, yeah, good stuff.
Right.
They're hitting on all cylinders with this stuff for the most part.
Question before you guys go. So there's 3 weeks left. At what point do you think they pull? I mean, obviously they're going to pull the trigger because that's going to be the match of WrestleMania. At what point do they wait till the last to go home show? Do they do it next week or the one in between? I'm thinking they wait till the last possible minute.
Absolutely.
I
think they do it on the Raw, and then there's the fallout, and they do the big hype and the push for the next night, WrestleMania Night 1 on SmackDown. So I think the go-home show or the Raw before Mania is where they maybe SmackDown is where Adam Pearce makes the match, and then on Monday, that Monday before Mania, they kind of have their full-on, you know, hash everything out, maybe even team up to keep the bloodline from doing something. And that's how the show ends. And then SmackDown is the fallout from everything and the big push for the next two nights. But who knows? I think it could work either way. Certainly not next week. It's either the week after that or the week after that.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I think they can make it work multiple ways. You know, I think there's different ways to tell the story. You know, Kevin can totally embrace Sammy. He can say, "I'm not your friend. I don't trust you, but I am united in your mission. It was hard watching what happened last week." I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, you can just conjure up all kinds of different scenarios and ways that they'll react to each other.
Does Sammy come hat in hand to Owens, or does Owens go to him like, see what I was saying?
You can do either.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, that's the thing. This is it's a tough choice. You know, I mean, if you're writing the story, I'm sure there's, you know, an idea in their head that they love or that they like a lot, but it's painful because you're having to choose. It's like, you know, shopping for a new car and you're like, I like this one, but I like this one and I'm going to regret, right. You know, like whatever I do, I'm not going to be able to get this car, you know, whatever. I mean, that's the WWE writers and everyone involved with the storyline are shopping around for the best way to get to WrestleMania. And then also the best setup for whatever the story is at WrestleMania. And I mean, obviously with this permeating both SmackDown and Raw, they know they're onto something. I mean, SmackDown's pushing to 2.5 million viewers again. And you know, this it's driven by this Bloodline storyline for the most part. And they're, I don't think they're going to just wrap this up and tie a ribbon around it and move on after Mania. I think, and I don't think it's going to be overstaying its welcome if they do continue things. I think there's more story to be told with how Kevin frames teaming with Sammy and then how Jay reacts to whatever he endures for the next few weeks leading to Mania and at Mania. There's too many good actors and too many matchups and too many twists and turns that can still occur for anyone to assume it's just going to be paint by numbers. Kevin Owens goes, yes, I'm with you, Sammy. I slept on it. Let's go fight him. And then they win and then they split and then they go their separate ways. I think we're in for more. And I think Backlash will have a Bloodline Sammy related match also. So we'll see.
Can you make the case for the Usos retaining and all that?
Yeah.
And go there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think you can, but
because I think a story could be told of the Usos winning and Roman losing. I mean, that dynamic alone, is just. Oof, I want to see at least a couple of segments where they have to. But I don't think Roman is on TV for 6 weeks after he loses at WrestleMania. We might not see Roman till Money in the Bank or something like that. So,
yeah. And I'm not assuming Roman's losing either. I don't think people should. Even if there's certitude within WWE today in some circles that Cody's going to win because of X, Y, and Z, we have to do it. Things can change in the next few weeks. You know, and I mean, there was a little bit of, I don't even want to say you're protecting Cody by having him out there with Sammy and out there with Cena, but you know, they're not in love enough with Cody's promo work to say, go out there and sell this match every week for 5 or 8 minutes. You know, I mean, they could be doing that, but they're not. That doesn't mean that they don't have confidence in him, but they don't have that type of confidence in him that the more he's on TV, the more he'll sell this match. And, you know, when they have the challenge of writing for him for 4, 5, 6 weeks, they might be thinking, I don't know if he's quite at that level. What if we do this? And there could be a late pitch to change things. And that's just going on what could be the wrong assumption that Cody's penciled in to win now. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think people should assume anything as far as this goes, what's decided now and the idea that it can't be changed. Cody is new to this platform and this spotlight, and decisions are being there's new information being gathered about what the best outcome is, including, by the way, just ratings. You know, SmackDown doing 2.451 million viewers, rounds up to 2.5 this week. They might just think, God, do we want to take the belt off Roman? And I think there's a case for Roman keeping that title until he turns babyface 2.5 years from now. Like, I you know, but I think you can also make the case that Cody wins the belt.
There's no way. I don't think they cannot put the title on Cody at this point, just for the simple fact of we've seen that before, and the guy never recovering,
mm-hmm.
Certainly never becoming like the star that the position that, you know, he ultimately came up short in, you know, what we projected and things like that. Cody's gotta win for making a new star's sake. Cody's gotta win, and I'm the guy, Wade, that did pretty much what you just said. Keep the title on Roman until 2027 for all I care. Like, this is working, and we could be in for just. But that's just, yeah, he's gonna drop the title and eventually, and now's
yeah, okay.
The, and now's the time.
All right, so let me go back to Aaron, who's standing by with us here. Aaron, thanks for your time. Was there anything about the Cena segment, because I didn't want to pivot to him, that didn't work? Or was the crowd just – did he have the crowd eating out of his hand with everything
that he said and did? He had the crowd eating out of his hands. I mean, that promo, that kind of reminded me of the Roman Reigns promo from years back. He just cut Theory down to size. He had no chance.
Why did he do that?
A great promo.
What's the point?
I have no idea.
Great.
Reigns, I understand why they did it, but Theory, like, he's literally the new guy coming in, and Cena just tore him down in front of everybody. I don't know if he's going to recover from that. I really don't. It's like that Rock and Billy Gunn segment from years back. Gunn never recovered, and I don't think Theory might if he loses either. I might be wrong.
Yeah. What else? Actually, talk about the heel heat for the night. Logan Paul, Miz, Bailey, heck, Finn Balor. We didn't get anything too fun with Dominic this week. But yeah, just like what heel act stood out as having the most genuine heel heat?
Well, Balor was cheered and booed, which is weird. He was cheered at the beginning, and then like he was booed like in the last few minutes of the match. Bailey was booed. Logan Paul was cheered until he told him to shut up. And so that was fun.
Wow.
Other than that, I mean, I can't think of any. I mean, everybody got a pretty much a positive reaction tonight. I can't think of too many like just flat out. This wasn't like Roman Reigns boo from like 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, I guess. But overall, I'd probably say the most probably heel he did end up going to Logan Paul.
I'll wrap up here with one or two questions just about off-air happenings. You mentioned the opening match that was off TV. Did anything happen after Roman off the air, or did they just, you know, sign off and say thanks for coming?
Well, to be honest, I had to leave because I had to go to the bus station, so I don't know. I had as soon as that segment was done with Jimmy, and I'm like, I'm on crutches, so like I wanted to beat everybody out so I wouldn't get run over.
Oh, sure. Yep. Understandable. How was the flow of the show as a spectator? One of the themes pre-COVID with our on-site correspondents was we feel like a prop in the crowd. There's all these dead spots. Did the show flow well for you? We're hearing that they're doing a better job now.
There was no dead spots. Like, there was easy. I mean, the time went by so fast. I mean, at one point I looked at my watch and I went, oh, my God, it's 10:30 already? Like, I just sat down 10 minutes ago. Like, what? No, they're definitely doing a better job. And I do agree with other correspondents, like props in the crowd and, you know, just, like, a lot of rest spots and things like that. But, I mean, this is my first event since WrestleMania 37. WrestleMania 37. So, but, yeah, in the past there have been some dead spots. But at least tonight it was an amazing flow. It was very smooth, and it seems to go very fast.
What's going to be the personal highlight for you when you look back on this event? What if you had to pick one thing that's going to stand out the most? Cena, Sami, Jay, and the hug and the super kick?
Probably that, because I'm invested. I mean, Cena's fun to see, like, you know, but I always look at him like I look at, like, all the other part-timers. He just comes in and whatnot, but as good as it is to see him, like, I'm fully invested in this Bloodline storyline, and I was disappointed when he did kick him. I didn't want it to happen. Like, I know what's coming in WrestleMania, but I have to like turn my brain off to things like, well, maybe they could go a different direction, and then they didn't do it. Like, damn.
But the fact that you allow that your brain, that you don't have to like kind of force yourself to well, maybe you genuinely kind of get wrapped up in that emotion. It's just,
yeah, it's
a lot to say now and, you know, a year or two ago. So,
well, exactly. And I look, and you mentioned, you know, was Cody having to win, you know, I mean, I know it's not the same thing, but, you know, Daniel Bryan was put in this spot. You know, he wasn't going for a title at all at WrestleMania 30, and he was kind of forced in, you know, to win with Orton and Batista. So, like, I feel like that's, he's playing the Daniel Bryan Sami Zayn is Daniel Bryan right now. And I think I like Cody. I'm a huge. I have a feeling that, you know, I like Cody, but I really want Sami to win the championship.
Yeah. Well, very good. Did you just get scolded for talking too loud?
Yes, I did.
Are you on the bus?
No, I'm getting ready.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. It's always, I always love the sounds of post-show from our on-site correspondents, whether it's in the parking lot or in the concourse or public transportation or whatever. Aaron, thank you so much for sharing detail. Oh, I know, the last question, were there any fan chants that cracked you up or stood out that tried to start and didn't get going, like anything in terms of that maybe didn't come across on TV?
Actually, surprisingly, there wasn't at all. They were just...
People don't have to entertain
themselves
on a good show.
Yeah, good point.
Good happenings.
Yep. Well, great. Aaron, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care. Safe travels. If you are interested in being an on-site correspondent for a future post-show following Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, the way to become one is to email me ahead of time at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. I don't know that we have anyone lined up for this Wednesday or Friday. So at least not on my spreadsheet. Maybe I do an email and have it updated the spreadsheet. But yeah, let me know any shows you're going to coming up here, and we can arrange to have you on the show. All right. So if you're live streaming the show and you want to participate, you can still call 347-215-8558 when you call push 1. As area code 716 has done. 716, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, what's up? This is David from Pennsylvania. How you doing tonight?
Doing great, David. Good to talk to you. What are your thoughts on Raw?
Yeah, guys. Love the website. First off, I read a lot of the different pro wrestling websites, and you guys do a great job covering the sport. I'm more of an Attitude Era fan. Probably the last time I was really, you know, followed wrestling and watched it every week. I mean, I follow it casually now. Was probably when Cena and CM Punk were feuding. Probably, gosh, over 10 years ago now. I mean, I still follow it, but I think the thing I want to see now that I've kind of I'll watch it with WrestleMania coming up more is I want to see Roman Reigns get beat. I think it's kind of like, you know, in pro sports when you have a villain, like whether it be a Tom Brady or a Tiger Woods or somebody, you know, who really always wins and you're just sick of it. And I think, you know, the way they're building this up with Cody Rhodes coming over from AEW, you know, going back to the WWE, you know, in battling an injury, overcoming different things, you know, I feel like that's a great storyline. And then I think the thing with Sami Zayn, I think, you know, Paul Heyman, you know, has talked about in interviews, just the way the crowd has bought into this guy. You know, for years he was just kind of like a middle-of-the-road guy. And now, damn, I mean, he feels like a main event big-time guy. And you could see that coming tonight where the Usos were going to turn on him. But I think there's some cool things with Triple H running the show. If McMahon can keep his side of it away from it, just let Triple H do the booking, I think that will keep people like me more into it. Because the reason I kind of got into it lately, I've been listening to a lot of Kurt Angle's podcasts he has. And, you know, Kurt will talk about some of the current stuff related to his time when he was feuding with Rock and Austin and all the great guys from the Attitude Era. So just kind of want to hear your thoughts on all that, and love your show and your commentary.
Thanks, David. Appreciate the kind words. Travis, talk about David's sentiment that they have pulled him into watching in order to see Roman lose. And I'll frame it this way. Is there a danger they wait too long, or is there a danger they do it too soon, and then it takes something away that is a driving force in watching the dynasty that is Roman Reigns dominate?
Yeah, it's not going to be too soon. We're past that point, but they can wait too long. And I talked about it last time we talked, you know, 6 weeks or so ago, where even though I personally think this is the greatest thing, certainly as an adult fan, over the course of years. This is not the summer of punk, which was great, but it lasted a summer, or the various decent to good stuff we've gotten over the last 15 to 20 years. But just as an adult money spending wrestling fan, this has been the best thing consistently that I've seen and watched week to week. It is absolutely understandable. I don't understand why it's taken so long, why there aren't 3.5 million people watching SmackDown. Like, don't you hear what's going on? You guys been talking about, like, there's no way you don't see on the internet or Twitter or something that there's good happenings. But yeah, like what's taking you guys so long? But specifically Roman being beaten, I've seen grumblings, and even though I think it's the best thing going, there are people saying, oh, I'm sick of it. That's just because the nature of, one, fickle wrestling fans, but two, just kind of society and today. And, you know, it's tough keeping people interested in something for 3 years. And that's what they've done with this Roman Reigns head of the table character. So they can wait too long. And I think even waiting till SummerSlam this year would be too long. WrestleMania right now is the moment to pay it off. Have your traditional season-ending signature main event match, and have the title change in a WrestleMania, you know, traditional WrestleMania fashion.
How are you feeling about Cody right now, Travis? Like, do you have any reservations about having him be the one to beat Roman and going with that decision?
Yeah. No, and I was the guy all through December and January, ABC, anybody but Cody, headed into the Rumble. Anybody but Cody, oh, God, I don't want to see Cody. He's not the guy. Vince was right when he told him, you know, you're not a man. But he's and they've convinced me in the last 4 to 6 weeks. I think the stuff with Paul Heyman, has the two interactions with Paul Heyman went so far, because that was right before that we talked, and it was that we were talking about, did you hear the smatterings of boos? Like, it was overwhelming positive, but we were talking about potential, how do they head this off? Well, oh, and this ties into what I wanted to say at the end of Aaron's correspondence call. Sami Zayn is not Daniel Bryan. It is not 2014. Sami Zayn has not spent the last 4 months climbing uphill a goat face, ugly, short little, you suck, and we hate you storyline and treatment in the company. Sami Zayn got his story, got his main event, got his hometown reaction, got all of those things. It wasn't, oops, we bungled into one of the greatest WrestleMania moments and matches, but Bryan winning the way he did. They accidentally fell into that by being jerks and assholes. That's just happenstance. That just happened to work out in the best way for the company, money-wise, I'm sure, and us fans. Sami Zayn is not Daniel Bryan. It is not 2014. Triple H has done an absolutely stellar job of heading off the criticism. He sees it coming because we all see it coming, but certainly he would see stuff coming, and he positions guys. He knows what to have them say to stave off certain criticisms, certain chants, fan reactions. And tonight, not taking a chance in Boston, he had Cody do the thing with Cena and with Sammy. It's just brilliant, forward thinking, just forethought, common sense. You just look at past and you know wrestling fans, you know your product, you know your fan base, and you go, okay, how do we navigate this and then make everything make sense? And he's done an excellent job with this stuff, specifically with Cody in the last month and a half.
Yeah. Good points differentiating between those two situations. I want to go back to David and just get his take on if there is if they would test his patience by waiting too long, and when is too long for you, David, in terms of Reigns losing?
You know, like I don't watch every week, you know, with Raw or SmackDown. I mean, I'll watch a lot of the clips on YouTube and kind of read about it on your site and the other websites out there. I feel like, to me, WrestleMania is where you want to see him lose. I mean, like, I'm a huge professional sports fan, so, like, I want to see Tom Brady lose in the Super Bowl. I'd like to see, like, I'm a big golf fan, too, so, like, I love seeing Tiger, you know, do great. But then, like, I'd like to see him, you know, get beat at major championships if you're going to see an underdog beat him, or him come back like when he won a few years ago at the Masters. So you want to see it the biggest event possible. I think if you wait to SummerSlam or another pay-per-view, it's kind of second tier to me. Like, I feel like WrestleMania to me is the Super Bowl, Stanley Cup Finals, Masters, NBA Finals. That's the biggest thing in professional wrestling. And, like, if Reigns is real cocky, goes in there like, I'm the man, I've had the belt for so many, you know, years or days, whatever they're saying right now with Heyman, who I think is arguably the greatest promoter ever. He's done so many different things with Brock, with ECW, with Punk, now with Reigns. I think it just kind of – it's so interesting, the whole thing is. And if he gets beat, you know, and the Usos lose that night, I feel like, to me, now you got a whole different category of, like, maybe the night after WrestleMania with Raw, you could go a million different directions. And I love that Raw the night after WrestleMania, because the hardcore fans are there, but you can get the casual fan like myself kind of more into it, because you're like, hey, who knows where we're going with the storylines. The possibilities are limitless.
Cool. David, thank you. Is there anything else you want to add on this call, David?
Just cool to see John Cena back there tonight. John Cena, to me, was the guy that, you know, carried the mail for so many years for the WWE. People, you know, crapped on him for a long time because, you know, they always said he had, like, the five moves of doom or whatever. I always go back to that match he had against Van Damme at the ECW pay-per-view. And I always was a big Cena fan, like, from a more of a, like, a hardcore side of it, where Cena, like, fought, took on all these different guys and earned the respect of technical wrestlers like a Kurt Angle or an AJ Styles or even Van Damme with his different style, his unorthodox. Cena was the man for so long, and now I'm glad that the fans respect him and honor him, because to me, John Cena is like, he's one of the all-time greats in WWE, and I think you know, people who are diehard wrestling fans or casual fans know, finally are realizing that, hey, dude is on the Mount Rushmore with a Flair, an Austin, a Rock, or a Hogan, because he's damn good at what he does.
Travis, anything you want to add before we let David go?
Yeah, there was no need for him to cut that promo he did. Certainly the second half of that interaction with Austin Theory I thought was unnecessary, did nothing for either of those guys. They just went out flat out, framed it as, you know, you win, you suck, you lose, you suck. It's like, well, what's he supposed to do? Like, how do you position a guy? Theory, how do you, what? I don't know what, I have no idea what they were thinking. And we've got 3 more weeks and certainly 3.5 more weeks. Well, I don't think they're going to show up on SmackDown, but, you know, some more episodes of Raw to sort this through. But is Cena showing up on, you know, 3 or 4 straight Raws? Like, I don't think so. Is Theory going to show up at Cena's Peacemaker event or something? Maybe. but as of right now, yeah.
Okay. I wonder if Cody was listening to what Cena was saying about Theory and going, hey, some of this sounds, makes me a little nervous about the Raw after Mania with Roman Reigns and all the pressure being the guy to end Reigns' yeah. Reign. David, thanks for your call. Appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too. All right. Our number, 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1 when you call. We'll go to William in San Diego next. William, welcome. Thanks for your patience. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Hey, no problem. Happy to call. Yeah, I guess we can stay on the John Cena segment. You know, I think I'm of two minds. I see where Travis is coming from, and I think I agree with his point, but at the same time, it was so darn entertaining, and it's just always, I don't know, something about Cena fired up, cutting promos like that, you know, cutting down his opponent and just killing him verbally is always kind of exciting to watch. So, yeah, kind of sticking with that topic.
They justified that whole thing by saying Theory gets to say you got a bald spot, which is it's just stupid. Why are they leaning into things that you normally lean away from? Sorry to jump in.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, so I kind of guess wanted to see if I guess we already have Travis's point of view on this one. But what did you think of the segment, Wade? And also, the other thing that stood out to me was them kind of lampshading the fact that something that I don't think they had acknowledged before, but that you know, they play fake crowd noises during certain matches. You know, if the crowd's not being loud enough
or
something,
are they talking about these things?
Cena kind of called attention to it, and I don't know if that's wise on their part. So, yeah, what'd you think?
So, I didn't dislike it as much as Travis, but I had issues with it. One, Theory's going to be just fine. Cena tearing him down is just – if Cena loses to Theory at Mania, Cena tearing him down and then Theory overcoming it is sort more of a star-making moment because it just makes it seem like, my God, you know, he wasn't ready. And it was Cena's pep talk that you know, clicked with Theory in ways that Theory might not admit for years or decades to come, and you know, brought out that ruthless aggression. My problem with the segment is, until late in the promo, it wasn't about Theory's toughness, ring skill, strategy, discipline. It was about, are you the guy? Like, can you be the chosen one that promoters love to market? And that goes to the crowd noise being piped in. Like, Cena has a history of this where, you know, you kind of watch Cena sometimes and you go, does he really and this is like, sounds crazy given the success that he had in so many ways, but there's times I watch and I go, does he even get what this business is about? And I've been critical of his promos before in this regard. I do not like a promo that's built or that sounds like a Vince McMahon rah-rah speech. Or even, you know, the flip side of it, this intimidation of if you want this, you better step up. And it was like Cena was channeling what Vince McMahon said to him behind the scenes back when Vince saw something in him and wanted to bring it out in him. And I could see John Cena going, Vince gave me this speech behind the scenes. I'm going to turn it into a killer promo on the air for you, Theory. I hear good things about you. I like certain things, but I'm going to come out there and act like I'm doubting you, and you're going to have to overcome that. I get that's his inspiration. I just don't like it as an approach on a live wrestling show. The best example of what there is not to like is the comment about piping in crowd noise. It was like when MJF last night talked about star ratings early in a 60-minute Iron Man match against Bryan Danielson. It's like, no, I don't care. Like, I know they think the audience they're playing to on pay-per-view that's not going to shatter anything or take them out of their zone, but it took me out of the zone that I was in. It made me think not about the story they were telling, but about MJF's performance and how it's on his mind, how it'll be received as a performance rather than...
Why is he putting Dave over in that moment? Like, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, regardless of that, you know, I just bringing up star ratings and the idea that this is a performance that'll be critically judged, I don't think belongs on a wrestling show, certainly not in a world title main event match in the midst of it.
Well, so, whoever's not making money for your company, why are you putting Keller over in that moment? Why are you putting, you know, that's what I meant, not Dave specifically.
Yeah. And he could have just said star rating. Like, I hope this, you know, I know it's going to take a star rating off my, or, you know, a star, whatever.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to mention a name for it to irritate me. Or I shouldn't say irritate, but it's just because it's not so much irritating as it's like, I was sort of like, oh man, that took me out of the moment. Now I'm watching this thinking that MJF in his head is worried about how people are going to receive this match. And I think that's small ball. I think he's bigger than that now. So with Cena bringing up the idea that there's piped in crowd noise, you are planting the seed with fans who don't even think about that. Like, is that a thing they do? And for people who know it's done, it sort of seems like, you know, oh, I'm going to cater to the hardcore fans. And that's so you know, it was
well,
tired.
It's more like, well, gee, thanks for confirming the thing that I didn't need confirmed.
Yeah.
Like, even though we all know it, we can tell, especially when they were really into it, you know, a few years ago. But you don't need that confirmed. You don't need that confirmed by the biggest star in the last 20 years. You don't. It's just Cena being Cena.
So in the end, though, in the end, the lasting impression is this huge megastar in John Cena, pro wrestling and otherwise, stood opposite of Austin Theory. Austin Theory looked like he belonged in the ring. He didn't look like – I don't think people were watching that going, why is Cena coming back to Mania to wrestle Theory? Like, that's not – so in that sense, it's a victory. You can be critical of Cena being excited about certain talking points that was always, you know, I think a flaw in his approach on promos. You know, and I mean, that goes back to when he stood in the middle of the ring on Raw and said, are we entertaining you tonight? I hope we're entertaining you. It's like, no, you hope you freaking win your match. Entertainment is a side effect of you doing your job as a wrestler in character, which is trying to win championships, not we hope you're entertaining you. So there's always been some wavelength that Cena's been on that I've fundamentally, vociferously disagreed with and thought was flawed. And that showed itself again tonight. But Cena's got star power. He had the crowd behind him. Theory stood there, and he looked like he belonged. In that sense, it's a win. And
until he started saying, you're Cena wannabe, look at that, look, camera, look at that sign.
That wasn't my problem. If everything else I criticized was taken out and Cena did that, I think that's what people are thinking. You know, I mean, I think you can do that in a non-meta way and just have Theory. You know, the idea being Theory is this hot shot who thinks he owns the world and has, you know, just that the world owes him everything and that he's got the look and the charisma and everything a promoter looks for. Like, yes, but you can cut that promo and say, Theory, you think you're going to look perfect on the poster. And you think that you're what promoters look for when they think of somebody who's going to give a good impression of pro wrestling when they go on talk shows. But you got to deliver in the ring. You've got to beat big names. You've got, like, get back into, like, I think wrestlers are scared to act like wrestling's real, but within the show, it has to be real. You have to every moment portray it as real, not worrying about chance and star ratings like MJF did, not worrying about, like, pleasing a promoter. But you can still talk about that and channel it in the sense of Theory. You can think you look the part, but there's a lot of NFL quarterbacks who are or college quarterbacks who are drafted who looked the part, but they couldn't read a defense. They threw more interceptions than touchdowns. You have to prove you can throw more touchdowns than interceptions. You can't just look like the next star. You need to deliver in the ring with victories. That's what I wanted to round out to, and that's to me where Cena comes up short in a lot of his career, and including in this promo.
Yeah, and he's saying this while the guy's a two-time United States champion who's beaten Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins. And like,
and he should put him over for that. Like, Cena should say...
Right, he could have said as a heel, he could have framed it as a heel and babyface. Like, we all know you're a two-time U.S. champion, but how'd you win those titles? Huh? You think I'm going to fall for those tricks?
Yep.
You know, just
there you go.
Bring it to the actual match that you guys are going to have and strategy and wins and losses. And that was...
Cena needs to put himself in a zone where he is immersed in the idea that wrestling is real, and what would he say if it was? And what you just said is what he would be saying. Yeah, you've beaten all these people. How did you beat them? And like the great line is, I'm not going to fall for that. I'm going to be ready for that. I've seen it all. I might be a half a step slower than I used to be, but I'm also, sharp. I'm smarter. I know what you're going to bring because I was you once. And, you know, so there's different places Cena could have gone there that I think would have been more effective. In the end, I still would say it's a positive. And I don't think Theory's, like, damaged. I just don't. I don't think he needs to recover from that. Because Theory stood in the ring opposite of John Cena, and they booked a WrestleMania match for him. That's a victory. But was it flawed? Yeah. Did they get everything they could have out of it? No. Did it drive me a little crazy at times? Yes. But in the end, I mean, Theory got to share the ring with Cena, and he looked like he belonged. And then, we got the bonus little interaction with Cena and Cody, too, which is interesting. And that's also, by the way, a card you can play later if you want. You know, if Cody wins the title but goes heel, Cena comes back, you can do a title match. They can team together, you know, against the Bloodline. I don't know. I mean, there's just having that little moment. It's just like, you know, sometimes there's moments in the Royal Rumble where you're like, oh, they're planting a seed. Doesn't mean they're going to play that card later, but they might, and now they have it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let me go back to William for follow-up on that or a different topic.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you. I'm still feeling a little higher or more positive on the segment overall, I think, than you guys. But, good stuff there. I want to talk also about the Logan and Seth Rollins segment. And, you know, I remember back to going back to Logan's first match. He was a heel, and I thought he did great. I thought he, you know, he came out and he looked like he was having fun with it and just, you know, relishing and getting booed and doing, you know, the Three Amigos and the Frog Splash against Rey Mysterio, and it just seemed like the perfect fit for him. And then all of a sudden he comes out and he starts acting like he's desperate to get, you know, the audiences, like for them to cheer him. But now it seems like we're back to him being a heel. And again, it seemed like tonight he was having fun with it, like he was enjoying, you know, riling them up and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think this role fits him a lot better. I'm happy to see him at least seemingly embracing it and looking forward to the match. What do you guys think of the segment?
Yeah, Travis, talk about the Logan Paul-Seth interaction and Miz's role in it.
I thought everything was okay. I thought everybody hit their cues, and this was, you know, Seth got the one up last week, and Logan gets an edge this time. I don't think it's like blockbuster or gangbusters or anything, but it was good stuff and a worthy and worthwhile segment. And Miz was, you know, was good Miz, you know, being a, you know, the antagonist, the kind of jerk he is, and throwing his weight around as if he's can book matches for WrestleMania. I am the host of WrestleMania. Like, and what does that got to do with booking powers? Oh, speaking of booking powers, somebody like Maxxine Dupree should not be able to make a match in an impromptu way. Just throw in a line where she says, I'm going to run this by Adam Pearce or something, not just giving Corbin orders and marching him around, and then we see the match. That's something I had an issue with. But small potatoes.
One thing I liked about the Logan Paul aspect of this is that it was true to his character to say, yeah, I'll fight you, but not for free.
Not for free.
Not in Boston. I'm a premium act. Like, you know, like, I mean, that's great. And it's true that that's how, you know, he probably talks behind the scenes, or how fans at least perceive that he talks behind the scenes. And so, you know, you're getting heel heat with a heel sounding authentic.
Well, also anybody that's 3 weeks from WrestleMania. Yeah, sure. Let's fight right here, right now, Monday Night Raw, pal.
Yes. Very good. All right, William, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, I want to talk about the match that was made, I guess, official for WrestleMania with the Damage Control, Becky, Lita, and Trish. And, yeah, we talked about, or you guys talked about the crowd reaction earlier. And, you know, that's kind of how I was finding myself sitting at home, feeling just kind of a little bit indifferent, which, you know, kind of sucks. Because if you told me 5 years ago, you know, that we would get a match with Bayley, you know, Shirai, Dakota Kai versus Becky and Lita and Trish. I'd be like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. But just feels like the feud has gone on for a long time, and it's not clicking. It feels like something's missing. And at this,
Damage Control isn't as over as they should be.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and I think another part of it is that it just feels like they're feuding for, you know, the sake of feuding. I don't even really know what the story is anymore, you know, aside from, I guess, they took their tag titles. But when Becky...
Which they're not wrestling for.
When Becky went out with the injury, I thought, man, it's going to be great when she comes back. She's going to come back, you know, looking for revenge. She's going to come back wanting to take down damage control, and we're going to get an eventual Becky, and it's going to be great. But all six women just kind of seem to be happy to be there. You know, there's not really a fire to any of their characters. I don't know. How do you feel about the announcement, about the match, and about the direction of the feud in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of a shoulder shrug. I mean,
Did Trish want to be there?
Trish's Mike's skills. I mean, like when she's talking and there's the pauses and the cadence to her talking, it's like, come on, you're on TV, let's get to it. And, you know, she got the treatment that, you know, the not so great promos get, which is, you know, a sentence and a half in, the music starts and the heel comes out and kind of picks up the energy. It's just, that's not her thing. And it never has been. I mean, I think Trish is, you know, was, you know, good in her era, but I also think overrated in terms of her influence and her everything. I mean, I just think she's put on a higher pedestal than I think her body of work and crowd reactions dictate, but she was better than a lot of what was going on at that time, of course. But to me, it feels WrestleMania worthy enough. You know, you've got two really big names from the past, Trish and Lita, teaming with Becky, huge name now. And then you have the Becky Bailey history, and then a couple, you know, people coming up through NXT. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. You know, it's a two-night WrestleMania, and it's a match on the show. And it's not a match that you would just see on a random Raw or even necessarily a random other pay-per-view. So in that sense, it checks that box. But WrestleMania is not going to – it's not going to be a good or bad show based on whether people are excited about – you know, excited at a high level about this match. And so, I mean, I give it a thumbs up as the match to book because I don't know – I mean, they could have done, you know, Ron and Baszler against – Becky and Lita, but if that was the plan, they would have done, you know, might have done something different with Becky and Lita in terms of how they got there. So, I mean, I'm fine with it. I'm not super down on it, but I mean, it's self-evident. It's not a red hot match either, but it's fine.
Absolutely cannot put Trish and Lita in the ring with Ronda and Shayna. I don't do that.
All right. William, back to you. What else for us?
Yeah, I think I go back to, you know, it just feels like I wish they were doing something more interesting or juicy with Becky going into WrestleMania. You know, I get that there's, you know, novelty to this match and everything, but I hope they have something for her after Mania. I guess that's all I say. I think going to the Moss and the Brock Lesnar match and the Lashley and Bray Wyatt stuff. I think there were rumors or speculation or something that, you know, the match was supposed to be Brock versus Bray until Brock turned it down. And, you know, if I was Brock, I really couldn't blame him seeing how a lot of feuds have gone down before with Bray. But, you know, in a, I guess in a parallel world or universe where, Brock was a more cooperative man. Is that a match that would have intrigued you a little bit more than Lashley versus Bray?
Wait, does Brock Omos, is that more intriguing than
sorry,
Lashley Bray? Or just, yeah.
If Brock had agreed to the Bray match, is that something that you think would have been better than what we're getting with Bray and Lashley?
But Brock and Bray is horrible. I can't imagine it working. I don't think it's good for Brock or Bray to be in each other's universe. It doesn't make any sense to me, and I can't believe it was ever pitched. And this is not like, you know, a controversial thing that Brock did. I mean, it's just like, that's not who I am, and I can't – I mean, it's just – to me, it's just self-evidently a bad idea. And I don't know that, you know, Brock needed to turn it down. There might have been other people who intervened and said, no way. Even before it got to Brock needing to say the obvious. Bray is a challenging character to book opponents for, Travis. Lashley's been all over the place as a character, and this feels, you know, just sort of shoehorned in, you know, doing the Muscle Man dance. Like, I'm curious what they had planned for Brock if they thought that far. MMA fighter, I can't think of a catchy lyric. I don't know. on the spot here. So, yeah, Travis, what
wasn't that a a reboot from he's played that video before. We've done the Muscle Man dance before. I don't know if it was to anyone specific, but we've seen Bray, Firefly, Funhouse Bray play that video on one, on his original Firefly run. So, yeah, it wasn't even new or specific for Bobby. He just is a guy that has muscles and it just happened to work, and that's probably why they said, hey, dust that off, dust that track off. But, yeah, it's two-night WrestleMania, and I think they felt they had to have something for Bobby Lashley, and I don't understand why Brock and Bobby didn't happen. I don't know why. Supposedly Brock would say, "Nah, I don't want to work with Bobby. I'd rather work with Omos."
Well, Brock's saying he doesn't work with Bray. I don't think. Did you hear Brock didn't want to work with Lashley again?
Yeah, but who's this? I don't know where. I can't say.
Yeah. But to me, I mean, obviously the better option would have been to just do Bobby versus Brock the right way, or not that there's a singular right way, but a better way than they did with, you know, clearly defined babyface and heel. I mean, they were going down that road with Lashley. Oh, I'll have my people look at the contract, and then jumping Brock from behind. And they finally were kind of giving him this like sort of heelish, you know, the heelish tendencies conduct, I guess. And then now he's, you know, I guess the babyface against Bray, but I don't know how fans feel. I mean, Bobby was but then Brock low blowed him. You know, it's like, it just, yeah. The
I
whole
mean, kayfabe wise, how did Brock go from, I'm seeing you in the back of my wife's head while we make love, I can't stop thinking about Bobby Lashley, to I don't even want to wrestle the guy at WrestleMania.
If that happened, yeah. Or you're saying storyline wise.
Yeah. Like I'm saying in kayfabe, like how do you not, you went from a guy who's obsessed with Bobby to, nah, I don't want to wrestle you on the biggest stage.
No, it's the booking of Lashley and Lesnar and Bray is just a mess. It's just a mess. I'm not upset about the Omos Lesnar match. I mean, there's just too many matches that we can watch all year, and you know, there's just good matches all the time. WrestleMania's gonna have enough good matches. It's like, it's not that big of a deal. And the fact is that they're not giving up on something that realistically would not have ended up being rushed if it was better. You know, the timing just wasn't there for Gunther. Build him up more. Make that a dream match when it happens, not a six from the top match on night one of WrestleMania. Like, that needs to feel big.
Are you saying Drew McIntyre loses or Gunther retains? If it's Drew or if it's
sure.
Some kind
I mean,
of
I think you can do either, but I'm not against Gunther retaining. I mean, talk about all that stuff the week of WrestleMania when we kind of, you know, look at the pros and cons of all the matches. But I don't think Gunther is necessarily going to lose or ought to lose to Drew or whomever. But whatever. But, you know, even if he loses, I mean, you can still build up the idea that Gunther against Lesnar is a dream match at some point. You know, rush. I think it would feel rushed if they went into it now. So, yeah. I mean, so to me, let Brock plow through Omos. It's like there's a – There is a slice of the fan base that's going to be intrigued by this, and there's going to be a much, much larger slice that aren't going to care at all. And you know what? It's going to be over quickly. And it's when the last time, you know, what is Brock's, you know, 3-point shooting percentage right now when, you know, like in terms of having big matches? It's just, he goes out there and he just suplexes people and it's over quickly. Yeah. It's like they pay him $1 million a minute and they try to figure out how to get him in and out quickly. He's not, this isn't sacrificing Sami Zayn or Brian, you know, Daniel Bryan at their peak, peak, you know, when he should be having a great opponent. It's just Brock. He's just been kind of going through the motions and he's got bad stories right now. Hopefully next year there's a better story for him.
And probably the entire point of this match is so we get to see Brock F5 friggin' Omos, big giant bastard. And, you know, WrestleMania moment. And we get to see that in highlights for the next, you know, 20 years.
And I'll use the word intrigued. I'm intrigued if there's any desire to protect Omos at all, or if it really is, Brock's just going to plow through him. And that's kind of, that's sort of it for Omos. As you know, this is sort of the last hurrah for Omos. We're going to get a WrestleMania match with Brock out of him. We're going to sell to some casual fans who are like, ooh, this guy might be so big. Maybe he can, look what he did to Dolph. And, you know, and then Brock plows through them, and it's a happy moment. Fans cheer, and we move on. And then Omos goes away for a while and comes back as a Jolly Giant, helping out Johnny Gargano against, you know, a heel Dexter Lumis and someone. I don't, you know what I'm saying? Just like they can repackage him later, and he goes away for a while. But I am intrigued with if that's what they do, or if they actually try to give Omos some offense and have him, you know, get anything in against Brock, because they want him even as presumably losing, which I think is a safe bet, looking credible in the process. Does MVP interfere and cost Omos the match, where Lesnar doesn't even get a clean win, and then Omos turns babyface on MVP, and then, you know, I mean, who knows? There's different things that they can do with this, none of it which leads to matches that I'm excited about, but I am curious about how WWE feels about Omos and Paula Beck in particular.
Yeah, that is a reason to pay attention to that match and,
yeah,
you know, get to kind of play. Well, no, that's, I mean, that's,
you know, it's
that's
genuine.
Sure.
Yep,
sure.
Totally. All right, cool. Let's go back to William for any closing comments. And we got Jay from Hartford on hold, so stand by, Jay. I'll go to William.
Yeah, I guess real quick, I just wanted to reiterate that I've been agreeing with you guys. I don't think I don't begrudge Brock for turning down the match. I think it's smart on his part. I don't want to see Brock, you know, going to the Firefly Funhouse or whatever, or interacting with Uncle Howdy and selling his offense or whatever. The last little quick thing that I want to bring up, I don't know how I feel about this, because I think, you know, in kayfabe, it didn't say really anything wrong or incorrect. But when Edge said that, Finn Balor cost him a match a few weeks ago with the United States Championship match that he should have won, and now Edge cost Finn Balor a match that Finn Balor should have definitely won. Again, referring to Johnny Gargano, it just seemed like they did Johnny Gargano a little bit dirty in an unnecessary way. How do you guys feel about the comment? That's all I had. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Thanks, William. Travis, go ahead.
Finn Balor's on WrestleMania and Johnny Gargano isn't. So, in theory, that's a match Finn Balor should win. And the fact that Edge, you know, did the, you know, no disrespect to Finn, no disrespect to Johnny Gargano was genuine, not just the, I'm going to say no disrespect, but then say something that's legitimately disrespectful. That's just a sports thing. Like, hey, somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose, and Finn should win that match, you know, 9 times out of 10. No disrespect to Johnny Gargano intended. That's just what's going to happen to a guy like Johnny Gargano on the road to WrestleMania. Johnny Gargano, the fact that he's on Raw and the fact that he's, you know, wins the occasional match, and more than occasional, he, you know, wins a decent amount of matches, is probably more than he could ever have dreamed. And not that he should lay on, you know, just coast off of that, like, hey, I'm here, but he's Johnny Gargano on Raw, and that's kind of where he's probably going to be and what he's going to be doing, interacting with guys who are a little bit more talented and more marketable than him.
Yep. All right. Gargano is a disappointment. It hasn't been able to get the way out of his babyface persona. It's kind of a bummer. I mean, I don't think he's beyond repair, because there's a lot of talent there. But Mustafa Ali and Gargano are two people who I would have thought were unlikely to be as unlikable as they have been in their Raw exposure. Yeah.
Have you seen Mustafa's new gimmick outside of the little clip they showed tonight?
No. What is it?
Well, he's like a phony Twitter motivational guy. Like,
yeah.
Super disingenuous. he showed up to Dolph Ziggler's meet and greet and basically told Dolph he's not VIP worthy. But guess what? I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, and tonight he told him, you know, hashtag, you know, have a good match or whatever the thing was. So they're still trying with Mustafa, and, you know, they like him enough that they keep giving him opportunities to get himself over.
Is that role I'm glad they're leaning into Mustafa coming off unintentionally abrasively unlikable and just going with it. I mean, that's smart. Is that a job that Adam Cole says Vince McMahon offered him as a manager still as a heel manager still open for Gargano? Because Gargano might be his best. It'd be a shame in a way because Gargano could be a Bryan Daniel type act. He certainly seemed like he might be at some point, but it might turn out if he can't flip the switch on the personality that he's been exhibiting on Raw, maybe the path is to him being that, you know, what Sanjay Dutt is in AEW, except, you know, just a better version of it. And kind of going back to the way gimmick as a guy who's, you know, had great matches, real good wrestler, but the money in him now is as that pipsqueak you can't wait to see get beat up because he's so obnoxious. Because, man, has Gargano been unintentionally auditioning for a part like that. I'm still holding out hope he can just, you know, go back to the Johnny Gargano pre the way and be an underdog who we can count on for good matches. But there's some repair to be done to get there.
Maybe he calls Cena the match against Theory and the way is reborn and Theory's the guy in the group, not Johnny Gargano. And Johnny plays his part as, you know, hype man for Theory and, you know, who knows?
Yeah. All right, very good. We'll go to Jay in Hartford next. Jay, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What is on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call, Wade.
Sure thing, yeah.
Well, a couple of things I'll hit on. We'll start with the Bloodline, right? I just got to say the story is money. It really is. I'm in Connecticut, and I'm thinking, man, this is one of the best storylines, right, of the last, whatever, decade, last 20 years, you're asking me, probably of my fandom. like Savage, Hogan, Elizabeth, all that, I know about this story, but it was like just before I started like watching all the time, so I only know about it in hindsight. So to be honest, like watching real time, right, you know, knowing what's going on as a fan, you know, in the current moment, this may be the best storyline I think I've ever experienced. That said, I'm like, I should have driven the 2 hours to Boston, maybe. I've never driven outside of Connecticut for a show. I missed them when they were in Connecticut tonight on SmackDown, where you didn't know if Jay would show up or not, you know, and he showed up and that crowd went nuts. And I'm like, oh, I should have been there. The point is the storyline is money. I mean, people are tuning in to SmackDown. I just wanted to give them their props for that. As far as what they did tonight, first of all, that Boston crowd was amazing. The buzz when Jay entered, like, I don't know if you noticed, I actually was watching while I was on the phone listening here, kind of getting through the rest of the show, and you could see the people in the front row, like, looking back as if something was happening, and I'm like, is it Jay? But it wasn't him just yet. Yeah. And then seconds later, like, it was nuts. But I didn't know. You knew it was coming, I guess, if they had to get to the tag team match. But I was sort of hoping that maybe they will go another way. Maybe they get to WrestleMania and it's like, hey, you know, still have the question out there of what's Jay going to do on the grandest stage of them all, and it'd be Solo and Jimmy, you know, and Jay finally show up and tell us where his allegiances are. But either way, and I don't mean to ramble, but the storyline is so good. And the super kick just, I'm like, oh, you know, it just really – What I liked about it, being a brother, right, what Jay did, he didn't do for Roman. In my opinion, he did it for Jimmy, right? He did it for with the Usos. This is my brother. We're the tag champs. And, you know, somewhere down the line, we're, you know, it's gonna blow up. I don't know how, but, you know, it's going to blow up. But Sami Zayn, he still is over as I don't know what. And I've heard this thrown out tonight a few times about Daniel Bryan. So, Wade, I'll say there were a few years back, like, I was not a fan of heel Sammy at all. I didn't like the long hair. I didn't like anything about it until they put him in a feud with Lesnar on SmackDown, and he started to kind of win me over. And then pretty soon, before you know it, he was aligned with, like, Roman and everything. But when he was a face, there was a time when they had him feuding with Braun Strowman, and I actually thought, you know what, maybe this guy could have his Daniel Bryan-like moment. And I think he had that at Elimination Chamber, just having that title match. I don't know that he'll ever get there again. I don't know that I see him actually becoming the, we'll just call it world champion, right? To talk about Daniel Bryan's influence, you know, you just got brought it up with Johnny Gargano, you know, could he have that sort of, run at some point? Sammy is just... I guess not. I didn't really think he could. I'm just making
mention. It's been decided.
Wade brought it up. I mean, there's
you
only
know
one
he
Daniel
can't.
Bryan. Let's not go there, right? He's like my favorite
yeah.
ever, so we're
yeah.
going to leave that alone. There's not going to be another. But, yeah, so let me move because I could gush about the Bloodline storyline forever. Theory and Cena Wade. I heard you guys talk about it, and this
yeah.
is really what bothered me about what I thought was a really good show tonight. First of all, and I don't know if you asked this question tonight, Wade, but you're good about asking, why was Cena there to begin with, right? Like, what was he going to say had Theory not interrupted him? And this is the
time I hope you're entertained.
They could have, seriously, right? Probably so.
Yeah,
typical
yeah.
Cena. This was a time when they could have, to me, just gone straight, the straight, you know, simple, predictable wrestling thing. Like have Cena come out and then have Theory come out and say, hey, you're the past, I'm the now. Like beat him up and you get to a match. The promo for me
yep.
didn't make any sense because I look at Austin Theory, right, and he's good in the ring. He's decent on the mic. He has a great look. He's you know, in a meta sense, he's perfect as like the young, egotistical, cocky, you know, I'm better than you heel. He's playing the role. What is it about him that he's not ready other than, you know, saying like, hey, you don't really have heart or something like that. So it didn't, everything Cena was saying to me rang kind of hollow. I'm like, well, if he's not ready,
mm-hmm.
who's ready? Mustafa Ali, you know, I don't know, Garza, like who Cena, like, you know.
Well, also,
like
he I'm
yeah.
sorry, let me jump in, but he also compared himself, he compared Theory to Boots and Trunks. He even said, you're Trunks away from
yeah.
being a jabroni. But he compared Theory now to ruthless aggression Boots and Trunks Cena, who up to that
Thank
point
you.
Had done nothing. Like,
Thank
Theory's
you.
Been mentored by Vince McMahon for 6 months on TV. He's a two-time U.S. champion. Again, we talked about who he's beaten and the Money in the Bank stuff. But, no, he's well past where you were when, you know, you got in Kurt Angle's or when you, whenever the Ruthless Aggression stuff happened. But yeah, I just wanted to say that.
No, yeah, Travis, you're right. Because when he said that line really stuck out to me. Like, what are you saying? It to me, it just was completely false. Right. And my thing with Theory,
he could have said, you're me with the spinner U.S. title and my stupid chain and,
yeah.
you know,
you
thinking
go.
I was
That's
thinking
it.
I was on top of the world and I was
That's
cheating
it.
To win all my matches. And, you know, you're there, but I turned whatever.
We've run down scenarios that would have been, I think, indisputably more logical, more in tune with the narrative structure of a wrestling show where matches are real, wrestlers are fighting to win, and there's plenty of material to work with. And it came across like Cena's been hearing from people about how Theory is going to be the next big star. And, you know, internally in WWE, Theory is seen as a future WrestleMania main eventer. And so Cena hears that. He's like, well, let me come in and say some of the things to him that were said about me. And it's like, well, how about you watch TV every week or talk to someone who does and, like, pull some talking points out of Theory's actual journey and some specifics instead of platitudes about heart and not having the testicular fortitude or whatever he did when he tapped him in the nuts. Like, just like,
yeah.
like there's real history with Theory, and Cena didn't show a working knowledge of any of that. He showed a working knowledge of hearing secondhand about this kid coming up through the ranks who reminds him of him. And so he channeled himself and his memories of what Vince told him and turned it into a promo. That's what it came across as. And I think in the end, like a lot of times in the end, some of the stuff doesn't matter because it's more about the imagery and you know, the actual match that's coming up. But it was a swing and a miss. It was a lost opportunity to get a lot more out of it because Cena could have brought actual knowledge of Theory and worked it into the promo. And we got platitudes and generalities and throwbacks and meta. And so, yeah, I mean, but that's the story of Cena's career. I mean, that's so much of Cena's, you know, I'm gonna
yes.
break the structure of how promos work, and I'm going to move it to a new level. And it's like, nah, just cut a straight promo. It's just, yeah, basic
yeah.
stuff like you said.
Yeah, it's like you say about Cody all the time, right? Just cut a wrestling promo.
Yes, yes. Stop saying this is when I'm supposed to plug the pay-per-view and just sell us on a match and we'll buy it.
Yeah, I also was curious about a couple things on theory, like even from the standpoint of why would you even offer Cena a title shot? And I thought that, and granted, I know he's like, hey, it's the grand stage and I'm going to make a name for myself at your expense. I'll put my title on the line, but they didn't really frame him like that. He's just, and I thought Cena being like the ultimate stand-up guy, you know, like, man, no, like there's a, this is typical Cena, right? There's a boatload of young talent back there who deserve that shot and, or something like that. I thought he could have maybe turned him down. And then you had all this history of the United States Open Challenge that Theory could have, like, played off of and said, hey, this is your time, buddy. I'm giving you the Open, you know, title shot. There was so much they could have done that they didn't do. Instead, just like, yeah, you had a title match. So, but I'm going to ask this question. What is it about Theory that, in my opinion, if you – I think he's really good in the ring, better than I thought he was when he first got called up, right? I'm like, oh, this guy can go. So for people who, you know, there's all this chatter on like social media or wherever, you know, what is it about Theory that people don't like, right? It, to me, it has to be something like outside of the world of wrestling, right? Whether it's, you know, I think there's been allegations about, you know, whatever, young, you know, girls, whatever, I don't know. But like, what is it? Because he, what is it that he can't do that, you know, we ask for new stars, right? You know, and we get them and then like we reject them. Maybe some people feel like he's being shoved down our throats, but I disagree. I use that terminology for someone who isn't ready. Like Roman's initial good guy character after the Shield, right? The character was horrible and we booed him. We wanted Daniel Bryan, whatever. And they put him in the right role. Now he's great. Yeah, that he was being shoved down our throats when there was someone better. What is it about Theory that I'm missing that some people are seemingly rejecting him? I think he's hitting all the right notes.
Well, it's one, I think he's going to win some people over. And I think some people who were not seeing what influential and top people in WWE saw on him are going to look for a reason to not come around on him until, you know, it's apparent that they have to. I think people are coming around to him. I'm hearing less of that now than I was, in part because Theory's earning it in the ring with his matches, and he's carrying himself like a star, and he's cutting good promos. Not just decent. I think he's doing good promos. But, you know, he looks like a guy who gets to walk in and leapfrog a lot of other people in line because he has the traits that Vince McMahon looked for, and he was a Vince McMahon protege, and he was the new chosen one like Drew McIntyre. There's going to be heat for that. The ironic thing is that's what they were going for. Like the pushback against Theory getting a big push is what WWE wanted. They are playing the you know, meta in a meta way, or you know, the they're playing the old term smart fans for marks. You know, they're getting the heel heat that they want and it's desired. They don't want smart. They don't want the internet savvy podcast listening, newsletter reading, website, whatever fans to be like, oh, Theory, he's the next big thing. They want doubts. They want people angry that he's getting a push. That's part of the game plan. I think that's a feature, not a flaw in the eyes of WWE management. People say that, and it doesn't matter because the fact is if Theory's good enough, he's going to get a push, and he's going to get crowd reactions, and the people who are on social media complaining are not the majority of the fans. That's the 300,000 people left watching Rampage. There's you know, 2.5 million people out there watching SmackDown, and they're going to buy tickets to see Austin Theory because Austin Theory is good at what WWE needs him to be good at. And he's going to win over the other fans too. I mean, I just, you know, the people who are critical of him. Travis, anything you want to add?
Yeah, it's just the chosen one stuff, and it's something to your point, caller, about wrestling fans. We want new stars, and then when we get them, well, not that one, not that way. Not like that. Not yet. Too soon. Not too late.
and sometimes they're right. I mean, it's totally fine to have an opinion that you're pushing the wrong new guy. I'm not like as a blanket statement against that, but be sure your reasons for being against someone isn't that you're being played in a way by a guy playing a character that's meant to get the reaction that you're giving him and you don't realize it. And I'm not saying that's the case in all situations when it comes to people critical of him, but he was kind of going for that. I mean, the selfie stuff and, oh, well, you know, you can imagine Vince, we're going to make you the chosen one, and we're going to have you on TV and in my office, and those fans who think they know it all, they're going to be so mad, you know, and then they are. You know, it's like, again, that's part of the intent.
Yeah, that's just it. You don't, to your point, Wade, there, I haven't seen, it's just a, well, he sucks. And then there's nothing behind it. Well, you're supposed to say that. He's a heel. It reminds me of kind of like Jeff Jarrett or something. You know, I was, I don't know, like 10 years old at the time, you know, when he had his initial run. But he was a bad guy, and I thought we were supposed to not like him. But, you know, hindsight, being an adult now and seeing how he's kind of viewed, people talk about, you know, I don't know, Jarrett Heat or whatever you want to call it, and people really didn't like him. And he was, I'm like, well, what do you mean? We weren't supposed to like him. He could go in the ring. He was a good heel. I don't understand. So I kind of got the same vibe with Theory. Like, no, this is how it's supposed to work. We're not supposed to like him. Like, I don't get it. So, but yeah, I appreciate your point.
Theory went, when Theory was in the way doing, you know, being the dopey guy, that was an act that he pulled off effectively. When he was the self-absorbed, selfie guy, that was an act he pulled off effectively. When he's acting like he's already a main eventer and he's the future and everybody else is going to be left in his dust because he's accelerating into the top tier of WWE, that's an act that he's good at portraying. And you know, it doesn't matter what the authentic version of him is. I mean, from what I hear, he is a smart student of the game who doesn't want to make any more mistakes and wants to learn and be successful. And have really good matches and hit the right beats on promos and is asking advice and is a good listener. But that's, WWE doesn't want to put him on a podcast to talk about that because they're smart enough to know that undercuts what they're going for with him and across all types of fans right now. So
I just remember John Cena even just made fun of his name for no reason. Oh, that's a name to remember. Like, what? Like, oh, The Undertaker and Austin Theory.
So I'll say, Travis, I was like, this sounds dumb, right? What do you mean? And then he kind of made it make sense, his point, when he's basically saying, you know, in theory, like, so like your name.
Oh, he turned it around, that part.
Right.
But the buildup to it was like, you're not Stone Cold, Shiva. And, you know, everybody was powerful, memorable wrestling names and Austin Theory. Like, well, give the guy 10 years and maybe it does. Maybe we are saying Austin Theory, you know, with that gravitas. It's like, man, John, he is a kid. Cut him some slack. Been around less than 2 years on the main TV. Golly. But, yeah.
All right. Wait, I'll leave you with this. As far as the Cody-Roman match, I think Cody's going to win. I think Cody should win, and I guess the question I have is, if not Cody, who else, right? You know, you look at Drew when he beat Brock and he was so over, and I think he had a great run during the, you know, initial days of the pandemic and all that. And then they kind of dropped the ball with him, in my opinion. You look at Lesnar, we know his story. We, you know, been there, done that. You look at KO, he's been unsuccessful. Like, I don't really see anyone else in the company currently that could be the guy to beat Roman Reigns. So if it's not Cody, I don't see anyone even in the pipeline, right? And Roman, to your point, and I just gushed over the Bloodline story, so he could be champion forever, but he's not going to be. So if there's no one now who can get the job done, then who? So I don't see any reason not to go with Cody Rhodes. I think he has the story as far as, you know, my dad and, you know, finishing the story, the dream and all that good stuff. This is the time. The only thing I wish is that the titles were split, and then that would make it a little easier. Maybe he could continue carrying on one of the belts on SmackDown, Cody go to Raw, but a little too late for that. There's just the one belt for now. So, yeah, my question is, if not Cody, who? Has that been something that we've thought about? Like, is this the best choice? I think that it is.
Yeah. I'm not anti-Cody winning, but I think they can do Jay against Roman. They can do Solo against Roman. They can have Roman turn babyface and go against the heel Austin Theory. They can bring Braun Breaker up as a babyface or a heel. You've got Gunther in some role. I mean, I think they're fine. I mean, they don't need 18 opponents per year for him to make this story work. So I'm not too worried about that. It, you know, I think they can you know, just by dropping somebody in with Bloodline, I mean, I think they can make the story pretty compelling. But Cody winning not winning the title is going to be a big setback for Cody, because it does feel like it ought to be his weekend. It ought to be his night, and he ought to be crowned. And, you know, 37-ish years old, it's kind of like, you know, there's not a lot of windows left to establish that he's the guy. And if he doesn't win it, you know, how much, you know, there's times in history where the trigger wasn't pulled on making somebody the champion. And then when they tried to go back to it later, it didn't have the same effect. So there is a risk of that, but you know, there is a lot at risk of ending Reigns' reign, but I sort of also just want to lean back and see what they have in mind for an ex-champion Roman Reigns, if that's what they do. And you'd certainly get more matches out of it. You know, Roman losing the title, if the Usos are champs and Reigns isn't, that first Bloodline segment backstage, Cody parading around as champion, Roman goes missing. I mean, there's all kinds of stories you can tell if Roman retains or he doesn't. There's a lot more to lose with Cody, but they might decide that they're not worried about losing what they have with Cody because they have other things in mind. So I don't think they're on a search to replace Roman if it's not Cody. I just think it's either going to be Cody or they're going to go with Roman for a while longer and tell some stories with different people. And I think they have enough people in the pipeline to do it. The next people Roman faces don't have to be as believable as the people who can beat Roman as Cody was, or have the fans behind them the way Sammy did. You know, that's a high bar to reach in both of those categories.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Jay, appreciate
agreed.
It.
Thank yeah. you. Thank you for taking my call tonight.
For sure. I was great talking with you. All right, Travis, let's wrap up with a couple emails here. Two similar ones. Jake in New Zealand said, I'm having a slight issue with Bianca Belair. I've grown tired of her entrance for an established champion. Why does she continue to have the hair twirling, skipping to the ring entrance like an excitable child? I feel she could evolve it to be something more befitting of an athletic take on all-comers champion that she is. I enjoy Bianca's in-ring work, and even my wife, who's a limited viewer, appreciates her athleticism. I also listened to your comments around Liv Morgan's entrance last week, and while this is a different issue, I'd like to see a more genuine edge to Bianca's presentation. I'm excited to see Asuka versus Bianca at Mania bell to bell all the same. One other note on email, this is from Tyler West. How did Bianca regress from being one of the most organic and original wrestlers on the roster to a robotic video game caricature of a pro wrestler? She just feels overproduced and inauthentic. I feel like every one of her matches have been the same beat for beat. I know you talk about it every Raw post show, but it needs to be pointed out again and again. She's far too talented for this. At this point, whose fault is that? Longtime listener, Tyler. Travis, what do you think about Bianca, her ring entrance, twirling the hair, pasted on smile, blowing kisses, slapping her butt, all the routine feels like you're just in play on a video, or, you know, playing a video game entrance.
You mean wrestling?
And then also just talk about Bianca and Asuka as a match too. So go ahead.
Yeah. She has a thing, as every single wrestler of note does. I mean, we're talking about her walk to the ring. It's how she gets to the ring. It's Bianca Belair.
It's awful. It's like an 11-year-old girl or middle schooler cheerleader. It's like, I've got this ponytail, and I'm gonna swing it around and skip to the ring and have this exaggerated smile and then dance to the beat of music. It's not that everybody has a routine; it's that her routine is demeaning. It's not who she. It doesn't come across as who she is when she's not doing that and she's interviewed outside of the context of wrestling. There's a relatable, layered person, and this looks like Vince McMahon's vision for something that someone needs to break her away from doing. It's unbefitting of a great athlete adult in her 30s, which is what she is. It's completely incongruent with how she comes across in real life, and who she comes across as in real life is a million thousand times more marketable than this cartoon character that she plays on her way to the ring. Again, that just doesn't feel like an adult woman in her 30s who's a world championship level athlete.
If you went the way of she's done this since, I'm not sure. I don't remember how she came out in the Mae Young class. She did that same routine, but but certainly from the moment she debuted on regular NXT TV, that's been her thing, and her bouncy walk to the ring. That's always been, even as a heel and babyface. I could understand if you say, well, it's time to evolve because, well, she's been on TV in some form or fashion for, you know, 4 years now. Let's maybe we go in a different direction. But it's not demeaning. It's not incongruent to who she is. She's not some serious girl wrestler that she can't have a bouncy entrance. I mean,
was it demeaning
4 years ago? I mean, then it had to be, like, did you have those same issues when she was, you know, top heel, you know, woman in NXT? Or
well, I've been hitting the note for years. I think she didn't, the thing she did in NXT to get heel heat, she carried over into WWE as a babyface. Like, you know, some of the stuff just comes across as it was invented to get heel heat, and then it wasn't dropped when the idea was for her to be likable.
Sasha Banks comes out and does her little dance, little shoulder sway, like, again,
I'm critical every week of Liv Morgan coming out looking like she's walking on a strip club runway. I think it's demeaning also. I think it's awful. I don't see men walking out at a top level and sexualizing themselves or acting like tweens. I think it's sexist. I think it's beneath her. I think she would be a much bigger star today if she dropped I think it's beneath her. I think it's demeaning. I think it's limiting. I think it's one dimensional. I think it's cardboard. I think it's childish. It's not what a grown female. I can't imagine in any other athletic field somebody acting this way every time and thinking this is a good way to market yourself.
I don't know. Guys come out there pumping their fists like they're, you know, T-ball players. I mean, I'm exaggerating my point here. But, I mean, literally, Sami Zayn comes out to ska music or whatever you want to call that, and he's like, he pumped his fist so hard, he blew his shoulder out in his first, in his major. Nobody says, oh, why is Sami Zayn out there acting like a 12-year-old who just hit his first triple? Like, because
Sami Zayn acts like a lot of professional athletes do when they score a touchdown or they're running out and high-fiving their teammates. That's different than twirling a ponytail with a pasted-on smile, blowing kisses, slapping your ass and doing this routine. I mean, it looks
yeah,
like
I don't think so. I don't think there's a difference.
Yeah, I think there's a huge difference, but we're not going to
– Sure.
We're not
gonna but as far as, like, her matches or it was the thing he said – what was the last? You still have the email up, but there was something. The second point of your Bianca stuff. It was like, well, that's management. That's how she's being produced. But I don't remember. I don't remember the specific.
Well, he said she's coming across as a robotic video game character pro wrestler. She feels overproduced and inauthentic. I feel like every one of her matches has been the same beat for beat.
Right. Yeah,
she's too talented for this. Who's
yeah, that's I think that's legitimate, and that's not necessarily on her. Again, he even says it in his even alludes to it. She's overproduced, or at least he feels she's overproduced and robotic. That's probably how she's. And even the smile, Wade. I mean, they're the history of making guys and girls go out there. I mean, Raquel with that dumbass smile. Like, stop it.
Yeah, we're critical of that too.
Right.
I think the way that the women are produced and carrying themselves is percentage wise much more egregious than the men. I think somebody being excited and pumping their fist or, you know, having a stage entrance routine is in a separate category than what a lot of these women do to try to get a reaction out of a predominantly male crowd or to please a predominantly male boss structure. Or the history of wrestling and who they're patterning themselves after. But fact is I have no problem with what Lita did on her way to the ring or what like there's aspects of the Trish Stratus gimmick that I was sort of like, yeah, but not at the level of Bianca Belair and Liv Morgan especially. But there's, you know, the Raquel thing, it's more, yeah, like there's an aspect of
– it's not that she's smiling. Like with Bianca, like it feels like – I never feel like she – I don't feel like it's a pasted on smile. I think that's the difference. Like when I see Raquel, like that's a big dumb phony smile. Just like when they would have, I can't think of an example now, but we've seen them over the years. Oh, Finn Balor. Good Lord. Remember? Like after when he, on his return after the shoulder, it was like, go out there and just show every tooth in your mouth. kind of smile. And that's what Raquel's feels like. But Bianca, I don't get that. I do genuinely feel like she's happy to be there, pumping her fist or shaking her hair, you know, twisting her, twirling her hair. Yeah. Kind of thing. But yeah.
Yeah. I've seen glimpses of Belair outside the confines of her routine within the context of a wrestling show where I'm like, that is an off the charts mega star waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And then she comes out there and a lot of people there's been history of wrestlers who are like this. They just turn into these kind of one dimensional, you know, video game characters going through a routine that doesn't feel authentic. You can point out worse smiles, like, or, you know, less authentic smiles, but Belair has just freezes in that smile and then carries it with her the whole way to the ring. And it's like her face isn't smiling, just her mouth. Mm-hmm. She could be such a bigger star if she seemed like an actual person and not somebody not doing a parody of a pro wrestling ring entrance, but just doing, a video game version of something over and over. Grow as a character. Every top star is growing, and she's doing the same thing.
Sure. Again, like I said earlier, that's a valid criticism. Like, you could say, well, yeah, it's time to add something and change it up.
It's two layers. It was bad. It's bad and it's stale. So I don't think it would be a good, like, if she had done something else all along and then this was new. I mean, maybe I wouldn't be as worked up about it, but I would still think it's bad. It's bad for a 33-year-old woman to be acting that way. It's juvenile. But anyway, I'm belaboring my point.
Are they not doing a Hall of Fame?
No, there's been no reference to it. I'm fine if they
skip a year. Because they said it last week. They were like, if they don't announce Batista as in DC, then we're not having a Hall of Fame. And then we didn't get an announcement, Batista announcement in DC, and we haven't since. So,
yeah, yeah. All right. Okay. Well, we'll finish up here because we're going real long. Joe from New York says, I've been watching Raw the whole show since the go home episode of the Royal Rumble. I've been forcing myself since it's WrestleMania season. SmackDown is such an easier watch. Not only is it only 2 hours, but you don't have all the filler you got on Raw. The whole show I felt was one good segment followed by a go to sleep segment, then another good segment followed by another go to sleep segment. With that said, the main event segment runs out of time. Really? I'm sorry, Vince. Triple H and USA Network need to know when Raw needs a 5 to 10 minute overrun. No. USA Network doesn't get a pass. They've had Raw for 27 out of 30 years. They know this is WrestleMania season. In fact, every Monday in March, USA should be ready for an overrun. This is the biggest time of the year. These are the biggest shows leading to the biggest shows of the year. USA pays almost $1 billion for Raw. You'd think they'd have more willingness to go 5 minutes over instead of running pre-recorded garbage. We need to see a little more of Cody and the Bloodline and see if KO would come down. Overall, good show, but way too much filler. The filler kills the momentum of the show. I believe USA and WWE should do overruns because that way you never know when the show ends. Some weeks and you'll go right off at 11, other weeks 11:03, other weeks 11:07. Then you don't spell out to the fan base. It's all predecided. Yes, we know, but don't draw attention to it. What makes it worse is they give NXT the C show that garbage an overrun.
Wow.
So first of all, no to overrun because it makes no sense for Raw to run over, but SmackDown not. You're just, in a way, you're drawing more attention to it because of the inconsistency. Second of all, 3 hours is too long. 3 hours, 5 minutes is almost twice as bad as 3 hours flat.
All right.
So that's no, no, and no. And I know you brought this up. I don't think the segment needed to last any longer. What more of a story is there? Cody ran out and made the save. The Bloodline retreated. This isn't the week for KO to run out. This isn't the week for Cody to linger and grab the mic and yell at Jay and Jimmy. The message sent is Cody's one of those baby faces. 2 years ago, we were saying, where do the baby faces go who run out and help a baby face in peril? Cody's that guy. And he obviously has an issue with Roman and the Bloodline, so there's a tie-in there. But it's a way, it's a transparently a way to give Cody a little bit of a rub from hanging out with Sammy and coming to San
Diego and all that. So.
Yeah. So no, but I don't think the show needed 20 extra seconds. I think it you want to go off on a high note, not with everyone standing around lingering, pointing at each other, or a premature run-in of KO. And no to a overrun if you don't want a segment. If you think the show WWE's masters at timing their shows. You know, and they're not, it's just not that often that they have issues with it. So you don't need to take a rare, infrequent problem and exacerbate it by making a 3-hour show even longer.
I could have, like I said earlier, I already said I wanted an extra 30 seconds just to kind of let the thing settle.
And that's fine. And maybe they were 30 seconds behind. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, maybe Jay stared at Jimmy a little too long. You know, but in, you know, right. Milton moment here. I mean, that's right. Okay. No big deal. And yes, I mean, if they had 30 more seconds planned and USA won't let them go 30 seconds longer. Okay. I'm with the email around that. It's like WWE doesn't have, you know, USA executives have a hotline that they pack up and go, we need 30 extra seconds. And USA goes, nope. Well, yeah, that's dumb. But let's not build in a systematic overrun. Yeah. I'm against.
Again, especially when you're 3 hours, already 3 hours in. It's probably not as big a deal if Raw's still 2 hours. We might already just still have an overrun.
Yeah, yep, exactly, yep. Cool, anything else you want to bring up, Travis, from the show?
No, good show. This was certainly a topical show, and it had us gabbing for well over 2 hours.
Are you enjoying Baron Corbin right now?
I wanted him to win his match, and I want to see Baron Corbin, you know.
Yes.
I obviously, Mansoor and Massey are just so good at the gimmick. I think if you add
they're watching on the monitor backstage. It was hilarious.
If you add Corbin, who's obviously not and would be that could be I just thought it could make for some fun weeks of TV. But Otis getting probably the attention from that group is probably enough. And Corbin's just going to go from storyline to storyline, maybe inserting himself at various weeks into other people's stuff.
Yeah,
maybe that'll be his thing. Go, guys. Just his sob story to every act.
And he's saying he's losing money gambling. The best part about this Baron Corbin gimmick is JBL's off my television.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. That there was zero chemistry there from the beginning, and JBL's
from the beginning, from literally the first time they were on TV together. I went, this ain't gonna work.
Yep.
Not even close.
Exactly. Totally. All right. Thanks, Travis.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invite.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.